As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply. As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
And what I do in terms of clearing and energy work is just to visualize our grounding cord, you know, the grounding cord connection to the earth, and just invite my body to breathe into that feeling. Allow it to exhale and release down the grounding cord. And whether or not I have evidence of energy releasing or not, I get a sense, a feeling of release in my body. And then what I can do is start to feel into, well, what does safety mean to me right now? And then maybe I conjure up an image, or maybe I have a safe place in my life right now, and or maybe I don't, and I can still conjure up an image. You know, I could imagine being just wrapped in a blanket and just being held here as safe. Conjuring up those images and bringing the felt sense to the cellular body does something.
The seven chakras, swirling vortices of energy, positioned throughout our body, from the base of the spine to the crown of the head. For thousands of years, this ancient wisdom has been passed on from master to disciple. What are the functions of these energy centers? And could these chakras help you unlock your destiny and find your true purpose? Welcome to My Seven Chakras. And now, your host, Aditya Jayakumar.
What's up, Action Tribe? AJ here, host and founder of My Seven Chakras, mysevenchakras.com, the place where we help you calm your mind, relax your nervous system, and experience deep states of bliss. In today's episode, I chat with author Wendy DeRosa about topics such as being an empath, clearing energy, uncovering subconscious imprints, how to avoid taking on other people's energies, and how to strengthen your own intuitive gifts. So if you like these topics and if you'd like to support our efforts, then make sure that you hit the subscribe button or hit the follow button on your iPhone, or maybe if you're on Spotify, so that more people come across this episode and we're able to grow. It's funny how this works, but when you hit subscribe, you automatically tell the algorithm that you like our show. And before we actually begin today's episode, I wanted to read out a wonderful iTunes review by a user named Lou on iTunes. And she says, or maybe he says, AJ, thank you for sharing this podcast with us. The ideas you tie together, along with your mode of straightforward and empathic expression, helps me feel seen in a way my life was missing. I feel like I finally have some true soul guidance to help me understand what I need in my healing journey and how to get it. Greg, me to read out your review as well. Then make sure that you go to my7chakras.com/review, my7chakras.com/review, and I'll read out your name as well as your holistic company if you'd like. So with that being said, let's bring on our guest for today, Wendy DeRosa. So Wendy, for someone who is listening right now but hasn't heard about you before, could you tell them a little bit about yourself?
Sure, absolutely. Well, I've been an intuitive energy healer for 26 years, and I am the founder of the School of Intuitive Studies, an author, a teacher. I support people in developing their intuition, clearing the energy in their body, and I also am a faculty member at the Shift Network. I have done a course on Mindvalley's Silvana channel, and this is my Becoming an Empowered Empath is actually my fourth book, so it's out now. I'm very excited about it, and I know we'll be diving into more about that one.
Absolutely, and it seems like that is a topic that a lot of our listeners are really interested in these days, especially me. And sometimes you come across people and opportunities and experiences based on what you need most in life. So I'm really excited to dive into today's episode. But before that, maybe if you could tell us, where were you born and brought up? What was your childhood like?
Yeah, it feeds into the story, actually. It's interesting. So I was born in Bridgeport, Connecticut. And I'm the oldest of oldest girl, second oldest adult child of eight children in a big Italian Catholic family that I grew up in that. And I can say a little bit about how that fed into being an empath, but essentially it's, as you can imagine, growing up in a big environment, and there isn't a lot of space, and there's a lot of, I was very sensitive, and so I absorbed a lot of energy as a child. I was very, very intuitive, and I talk about this in my book, but I had all four clairs as a child, and I could say that now. I couldn't say that back then. All I could say back then is I was, I was living an experience of overabsorption, and eventually gained a lot of weight as a child, eventually developed anxiety and depression, and had a nervous breakdown in my teenage years from energetic overload and oversensitivity and a lot of internal pressure. And out of that, I started to pursue a calling on, I don't even know what it was. It was a heart calling to explore more of what my gift was at the time. And found a healing teacher, and sort of fast forward, I had sessions clients for, a good 10 years. By the time I was 30, I had 500 clients from word of mouth. Facebook didn't exist back then. And so then I started developing trainings and teaching people how to develop their intuition. And it's been the past 10, 15 years of doing that. But my discovery into my gift certainly came out of an extraordinarily overwhelming oversensitivity experience as a child. Mm.
Right. So you say oversensitivity, and at one point you also said energetic overload. So what did your life look like as a child? What were some of the challenges that you had to go through in the midst of your large family?
So I was, I was a very in-tuned child with what everybody needed around me. And I was, I was ultimately the oldest child. The oldest girl, child. I moved into a sort of a secondary mothering role for my siblings. And I learned how to put my needs aside completely and take care of my siblings. And so I was, when I was young and growing up, I knew how to change diapers at the age of 7. I knew how to stay home with my siblings when I was 8 years old. I mean, I was I was put in, I was in a role of responsibility very, very young, and but growing up, and you know, and there were a lot of pressure. There was a lot of pressures in our family economically. You know, we didn't have much growing up, and so I was, you know, we were eight kids. We were, we didn't have a lot of money. We were, you know, things were handed down to us, which I mean was a blessing, and we're very grateful. Sometimes villages help each other out, you know, and then we were that family that had, you know, had church donations and things like that, and just growing up in our, in my childhood. And then I went to work at 12 years old, and we, you know, we had phone bills. We didn't have phone. We didn't have water. Sometimes we didn't have electricity. And so I'd go to work and babysit, and then I would have to help pay some of the bills at home. And, you know, and that continued the majority of my teenage life. And I just didn't have a playful childhood. I didn't have the high school years that, you know, I think people rebel and, you know, go to parties. I don't know what, I mean, you know, others did. And that wasn't my life. You know, I went to school and I went to babysitting and I went to work at a bakery, and I worked all the time, and because we needed it at home. And then it just got to the point where at 19 years old, when I had gone off to college, I had a nervous breakdown in my third year of college, because I was, you know, a lot of that, you know, from that pressure that I lived through, you know, I was very, very responsible. And sometimes that responsibility was internalized to where I had an inner pusher. You know, I had to do well. I had to get, you know, I wasn't someone who skipped out on doing papers or things like that in college. And so there was internalized pressure on top of conditioning. And by the time I was 19, I just had a nervous breakdown. And I felt this call from within. I was living in Boston at the time, and I wanted to, you know, I saw this picture of Colorado in a magazine. I mean, again, internet wasn't what internet is today. So I didn't even think I don't think I even had internet back then. But, you know, I saw this picture, and it just felt like, that's what I need. I need space. I need to breathe. I need, you know, it represented something for me that I never really understood, you know, that back then. And so long story short, I ended up following, but I didn't realize that it wasn't really about Colorado. It was about my intuitive abilities and my gifts opening up to me. But there's another piece of the story that's actually incredibly important, which is that, you know, after the nervous breakdown, I was recovering in my dorm, and I had a roommate at the time, and we went for a walk, and I was trying to decide, do I, you know, quit, leave school now mid-semester, forfeit tuition, forfeit, you know, life, just quit. And we were trying to make the decision, do I go home now or do I stay and finish the semester? And we went for a walk down Newberry Street in Boston. And at the time there was this big Tower Records on the corner. And we were walking and talking, and this man is on the street corner carrying a ukulele, and he's wearing this red jacket. And he says, can I sing you ladies a song for some spare change? And we were engaged in conversation, and I said, no, that's okay. And then he says, no, Wendy, you need to hear a song. And he calls me by name, and he says, forget about the change, I'm going to sing you a song. And I look at him, he gets down on one knee, and he has a glow around his head this way. And all I could see was this like red jacket and this glow. And he sings this song that says, home on the range where the buffalo roam, one day you'll get to Colorado. And I'm in shock that this is happening. And he says, Wendy, it's not your time to go yet. You're going to get there. Hang in there. And he gives me a, he stands up, gives me a kiss on the cheek, and then vanishes behind me. And my roommate and I had just witnessed this together, and we're looking at each other and looking back, and this guy is gone completely. And at that moment, I had a profound healing of the anxiety that I was, that was so deep and so hardwired in my being, that there was a transmission healing there on the street, you know, in this, here in Boston, you know, and we were giddy walking down the street and just kept saying, I can't believe that just happened. And we both knew it was an angel that we just encountered. And that was the moment, that was like the pivotal moment through which I would say I had my first awakening. And I finished the semester and I did end up moving out west, and I found a healing teacher. And then my journey started to begin, learning about chakras and all different aspects of healing work. But it came out of that, you know, that breakdown and that incredible divine intervention.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting, because as I look at it, sometimes the universe finds opportunities to pass on a message to us. And that could be in the form of a magazine, or maybe something that we read, or maybe a conversation that we have. And oftentimes, when this happens for the first time, we tend to ignore the first instance. We feel that it's maybe just circumstantial, or maybe it's, you know, it's just my mind playing games on me. But when it happens again and again, especially in your case, where that person, that angel came to you and specifically, right, gave you a message, when it happens multiple times, then you sort of get an inkling and an idea that maybe, no, maybe it's my intuition trying to communicate with me. Because from time to time, I also, you know, a couple of months back, as I was crossing the street, I live in Vancouver. And if you're in Vancouver, you can always see the mountains far away. And you see the snow-capped mountains. And it felt as if the mountains were calling to me and telling me, what are you doing here? You need to be up in the mountains. And sometimes, you know, nature has a way of speaking to you, right? Do you find that also?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, I love even the part you said about how sometimes we don't, you know, we get these signs and we get these intuitive, you know, nudges, messages, and then we don't always listen to them. And I think that that was like a good part of my 20s, was that I felt an awakening happen and a journey, but I didn't, I felt too young for it. I knew I was being called into healing work and being a healer, but I felt at my age, I'm not ready. I didn't have a rebellion yet. I haven't been a kid yet. Yeah. I need that. And so I denied it for so long, and that the chaos that ensues when we deny, you know, those callings. Mm-hmm. The calls to the mountains, or the calls to stepping into your gift, or whatever it is. Yeah. Like we navigate a lot of chaos.
Yeah.
When we don't listen.
What comes to my mind is that movie by Ben Stiller. Have you seen that? I forgot the name of the movie, but it's all about him, you know, doing a normal 9-to-5 job, but at the same time having these dreams and aspirations and these visions of just escaping, just going away from the status quo. And he does that in that movie. I forget the name of the movie. And if someone's watching this, if you remember the movie, let us know in the comments. But Wendy, you talk about the term personal conditioning. What does that mean to you?
Yeah, so conditioning is the bonding experience that we receive in childhood. It's essentially the family of origin, or the societal structure that gives us teachings that become inherent in our body, in our mind, in our energy system, and we. Another way of saying it is, it's our inherent energy, it's our implicit biases, it's our hard wiring. These are some other sort of different ways, different synonyms, I guess, to this conditioning. Mm-hmm. It's essentially the energy we were raised in, that might include our belief systems and sort of the unspoken codes and rules and beliefs and ways to survive our system, the system that we're born into.
Interesting. Yeah. And so I guess part of the journey is firstly finding out what are these conditionings that we've been conditioned to over the last couple of months or years. And through this conditioning, I think what you've implied is one of the byproducts of the intuitive's life or the empath's life is being able to sense the energies, right? Because the more we do the meditation or the breath work or maybe journaling, we get to connect with our own energies, but also the energies of others around us, whether it's one person or maybe a group or maybe collectively as well. We tend to take on those people's energies, their stress, their angst, their worry, their anger as well. And so especially because of what we're going through collectively right now, the divide, the fear and anxiety driven by the global virus. So tell us more about this sensing into this group energy, this collective energy, and how can this affect us if we take on this energy, mm-hmm. sometimes without even knowing?
You know, it's so powerful right now because, you know, I wrote this book on being an empowered empath, and yet so many people are having empathic experiences right now in the world, whether or not they identify as an empath. And part of it is because, you know, we are certainly in a massive collective upheaval, a necessary one, where what has been suppressed in and oppressed in our system. So going back to the conditioning question, I mean, part of what, you know, conditioning isn't negative. It helps us survive in a system. And yet we're an evolving species, human beings are. We continue to evolve, and therefore the systems that we have been raised in are only going to last for as long as our awakening allows them to be, and then they become outdated systems. And so our conditioning might have been appropriate for the system and the time and the era of our survival, but now as spiritually progressing souls, that conditioning becomes outdated. And so here we are collectively in the time where the system is being rocked, the patriarchal system, ultimately, the fear-based system, the system where of control and oppression and suppression and, you know, superiority over populations. Like, this whole dismantling is happening, and it's ugly, it's painful, and it's stirring truth and it's stirring trauma. As when trauma collectively stirs in the field, it certainly touches on our own individual traumas, and it's both. It's like our individual traumas are awakening to us, and that's part of what feeds into the collective, and vice versa. The collective trauma touches our personal traumas. Well, that's important, and it's not. It's painful and it's hard. It's not negative. It's necessary. And it's necessary for us to start to look at, you know, where have I been living patterns of suppression and oppression and powerlessness in who I am, and how has the collective, you know, also participated in that either as a victim or a perpetrator, you know, in it. And how are we going to heal these systemic pieces that we're holding in our body? And so ultimately what happens is the empath has this powerful job in the world. The empath's job is to be able to feel the subtle and to be very in tune with the needs of other people and with emotions and with the sun and the moon and the tides and the stars and the earth and with the creative process. And the empath's the empaths need connected conversation. They need vulnerability. They need truth. They don't need to be lied to. They don't believe it if they're being lied to. I mean, this is, empaths are really leading a way in terms of compassion and connection and unity. And they're also experiencing at the same time the uprising of personal trauma and collective trauma. And that might be a big word for some. It might not feel like it's trauma for some people, but history lives. History is unearthing.
Action Tribe, we're going to take a few moments to thank our sponsors because they are supporting us today. Action Tribe, one of our goals of this podcast is to help you calm your mind. And maybe you've tried meditation in the past, but it hasn't worked for you yet. I invite you to try out Headspace, a simple way to experience meditation and mindfulness, even if you have just 5 minutes. And I have a free invitation for you to try this out. Headspace is your daily dose of mindfulness in the form of guided meditations in an easy-to-use mobile app. It's one of the only meditation apps advancing the field of mindfulness and meditation through clinically validated research. And according to a research they conducted, just 30 days of Headspace lowers stress by 32%, and just 4 sessions can reduce burnout by 14%. If you are overwhelmed, Headspace has a 3-minute SOS meditation for you. Need some help falling asleep? Headspace has wind-down sessions their members swear by. And for parents, I know many of you are parents, Headspace even has morning meditations you can do with your kids. Just this afternoon, I listened to a beautiful 10-minute guided meditation that helped me relax and calm down. The fact that there was no music, just the teacher's voice and silence made it really tranquil. And I also love their SOS section where they've got meditations for overwhelm, burnout, panic, or frustration, which are experiences that many of us are going through right now in the midst of this global situation. And if you like to meditate live with others, they've got a live guided session happening every 30 minutes or so. You deserve to feel happier. And Headspace is meditation made simple. So go to headspace.com/7chakras. That's headspace.com/7chakras for a full 1 month trial with access to Headspace's full library of meditations for every situation. Action Tribe, you gotta try this out because it's for free. Head to headspace.com/7chakras today. Action Tribe, you're gonna love this free experience, but you gotta use this specific link so that they know that Action Tribe has arrived. Go to headspace.com/7chakras. And now back to our episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's for sure. And I guess trauma is an understatement because I'm sure that a lot of people, including me, are going through this challenge right now. For me, it started last year, you know, when the virus just began, but more recently, maybe about a month and a half back, I had this deep set intention to experience some plant medicine. So I did a mushroom journey and I really went deep within, opened up to so much synchronicity and understanding what this universe is all about. Then I had a 3-day juice cleanse, just juice, and that opened me up even more to the subtle layers, to everything that I was experiencing. And it felt like I was opening up a lot of the trauma. And then my mom in India got diagnosed with COVID. And then she went into the hospital. Then she went, and now she's in the ventilator. And that brought about, for the whole family, so much of trauma, ups and downs, roller coasters. But also in a good way that allowed me to be more vulnerable in my requesting my community members to pray, to heal, to send chanting for my mom. And the response that I got was overwhelming in a positive sense, that all the people leaned in together to chant, to heal, to offer blessings to my mom. And so I totally get you when you share that, you know, we're all going through this together, and we either, you know, find our own separate ways, or we come together and realize that we're not that different. We're all going through our own challenges and our personal struggles, and we're better together, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It is. It's a it is as more empaths and human beings, yeah, ultimately through vulnerability are sharing their truth and experience that they end up making it possible for someone else to share their truth and their experience, and therefore feel a sense, I keep your feelings, mm-hmm, and don't share anything about yourself and don't trust anybody. And that those might have been beliefs that were necessary during a particular time of survival. Yeah. And now our time of survival is, I need to know I'm not alone in my experience. Mm-hmm. And that's where empaths or people who are empathic, they don't always have to identify as an empath, but people can say, gosh, I relate to what you're saying and I'm with you and I get it. And that helps me feel a sense of belonging. It's very powerful.
Yeah, absolutely. And in your sharings, you also talk about the upper body intuition and then the lower body intuition. So how are they different?
Yeah. So the lower body intuition is the empathic intuition and the claircognizant intuition. And specifically, the first three chakras are the empathic power centers and the claircognizant. Claircognizant can also include the heart, but it's essentially the claircognizant relates to the knowing sense in the body. People who are claircognizant will say, I know because I know because I know, and I can't tell you why I know, I just know. And they might have they might get the chills, they might get body sensations, they might need to go for a walk and their downloads come. They just get things kinesthetically through their body. And empaths are more clairsentient, and clairsentient relates to the first, it actually relates specifically to the second and third chakras of the body. And those are the subtle chakras. There are relational chakras, relation to people and to our horizontal connections and attachments on this physical experience. And so the job specifically for the second chakra is to feel the subtle, to feel what's going on beneath the table, to be in tune with, you know, the feminine and the sensuality and the vulnerability and empathy. Those are all qualities of the feminine nature, being in tune with emotions. So that's all very lower chakra, lower body intuition. Upper body intuition, and the heart's sort of between both. The heart relates to both lower and upper. So the upper body intuition is going to be more about the clairaudience and the clairvoyance. So I see intuitively pictures or images. I hear higher guidance downloads, or sometimes I hear my lower body. Also, I hear my intuition from my inner child or from my heart. So upper body intuition, sometimes I would say, these are some definitions people relate to, is where mediumship and psychic might be more related to upper chakras, whereas empath.
And what happened are in conflict with one another? Maybe your upper, your upper intuitive is saying one thing, but your lower part is saying the other. Your sacral chakra, your solar plexus, and your root is saying something else. How do you decide, you know, what to choose and go through this?
Yeah, so it's a good question. First of all, I would just back up to say that everything, the intuitive system, let me say this, anyone can be upper and lower. So it doesn't have to be either or. Some people are both and activated in all four aspects of intuition and maybe others. The root chakra area of our body, which connects us to the primordial sense of safety, security, attachment on this physical plane, nurturing, and grounding, is essential for our intuition. It's essential for our upper body intuition and our lower body intuition. And one of the things that can happen is that, you know, we can be raised in environments where it's just not safe to be completely dropped in and embodied in the first chakra specifically. second also, and third. And that sometimes can happen when innately we were raised in environments where we got it somewhere verbally, non-verbally, pre-verbally, that it's not okay for me to be me, and I can't be, I don't belong here, I don't feel safe being myself in my body. And so what happens is the soul will disconnect ultimately from the consciousness of the root chakra and live higher in the body, because that's safer. It's safer to be in the mind. It's safer to be in the front of the body, which is ego consciousness. Back body is soul, is connecting to our spirit and our higher self. So if I were intuitive and I got, and I was, maybe I was strong in my upper and lower body intuition, and my gut is saying, don't do that, like, listen to me. And my mind is saying, well, that seems amazing. And my heart really wants it. And I could give myself 15 reasons why I should do this. If the lower body, the lower body intuition is very related to our emotional needs, our met or unmet needs in the lower half of our body. And so if my gut is saying, hang on, this isn't working, pay attention, do some research, my gut is trying to ground me, is trying to slow me down. Upper chakras on the intuitive level is fast processing. Lower chakras are slow processing. So empaths, if you are a slow processor, own it. I am a slow processor. I need to take my time, and I will get back to you when I know for sure, when I've sat with it, when I've run it through my system. So sometimes my advice in that case is, when the two are in conflict, is that you come into grounding and that you tune in to that lower voice that's saying the opposite and inquire, you know, what is this about? You know, is it a gut fear I have to process, or is it something I need to listen to because I need to pivot from what I'm trying to decide? So, yeah, that would be my...
Very interesting. Response. And I love that suggestion that you have, is to have a dialogue, maybe mentally or maybe through journaling, and connect with either your root or maybe one of the three chakras, and, you know, explore what message might be coming through. And connected to that, you talk about the root chakra contraction, right? Mm-hmm. So how does this contraction play out in life, or maybe any examples that you can share?
Yeah, so if I'll say this just in first person example. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If I were raised in an environment where there was a lot of projection of emotion, maybe yelling and screaming, maybe there was boundary crossing, maybe there was trauma, maybe there was an extreme amount of control, to where inherently, innately, I get it as a, again, pre-verbal, I mean, before the age of three, I get it that I need to contract my own connection to myself. I need to shut down to myself on some level so that I can abide by the conditioning that I'm being raised in, the nonverbal, unseen teachings that I'm getting at this age. So I'm going to get inherently inside my body that it's not safe for me to be me. It's not safe for me to belong here. I can't belong in my body as I am, because I'm getting expectations of how I'm supposed to be instead of validation for who I am. And this happens in parenting. This happens when we have been raised with outdated consciousness too in parenting, like children are meant to be seen, not heard, when we've been punished for our emotions and our authentic nature wasn't validated, we start to essentially, the root chakra contracts, and it's a fear contraction that happens, but it's also self-preserving. It does it to protect us. And what happens at that point is that the second chakra will compensate. And it may compensate also by closing down, or it might compensate by opening up. But what will happen in the imbalance of it compensating is that that power center, where its job is the empathic power center to feel everything that's going on that subtle level, is that chakra then goes into an overdrive. And essentially, that's the moment hypervigilance kicks in. And empaths, as children, become hypervigilant. They start to, on a subtle level, pay attention to everything that's going on in the environment around them, because safety depends on it. And I need to pay attention, I need to be on alert, and I need to be attuned to everything outside of me so I know how to organize myself in this environment and space. That is the empathic pattern that repeats itself in adulthood, where the upper body says, I don't want to be taking on the energy of the world or of other people. But the lower body has a mind of its own. It's playing that pattern. I need to be attuned to what everybody else is experiencing or thinking and feeling, and meet those needs, because my young self, the young consciousness in my body, doesn't know any different. That's survival. That's how I've learned to exist. And so the solar plexus will do a similar, in that the solar plexus also will open up and start to read energy, and will lose boundaries, personal boundaries, in the third chakra area of the body, and will start to over digest. I mean, take in way more energy through the gut than the digestive system can handle. And then we have digestive issues and, you know, gut related, you know, imbalances going on. But essentially, these two power centers become imbalanced because the root chakra has gone into contraction very early on in life. And so our work as empaths, and I talk about this a lot in the book, is to start to reclaim the sense of safety and grounding and belonging in ourselves, in our own body, no matter what our childhood looks like. And that we start to, again, relax into self, and all the practices like breathing and meditation and mantra, and, you know, all the practices help that process of grounding powerfully in mantra. As we allow the root chakra to unfurl, the second and third chakras actually can come into balance on their own with a lot less work than what we would, you know, than what we would need to if we were going to go into each of them and keep healing, keep working on the energy.
Yeah, that is really, really true. I mean, children from ages 0 to 7 are at a very impressionable age, right? Because their brains are essentially in a hypnagogic state, so they can receive and download, and that's why they learn languages so quickly, because it's all about absorbing ideas. And like you said, you know, it could even be, right, they're in one room and someone's having an argument in the other room, someone's abusing, or maybe like a physical altercation. Maybe the adults don't mean that, but the child has assumed and has taken it as truth. How do we go about, first of all, ascertaining what exactly happened? Because this is pre-verbal, right? Deep down, maybe something happened when I was, you know, 2.5 years old that I don't even, you know, recall. And part of the question is also, sometimes children have a very vivid memory. I know what happened when I was age 3, age 2, maybe age 1. And in my case, I don't have a lot of vivid memories. Does that imply something? Does that suggest something? So,
not really. I mean, you know, it's very common to not have much memory, you know, early on in life. And then there are people who say, I remember being in the crib, and I have a memory of being 9 months old. And I mean, that's probably, in my experience, and again, maybe another expert would say something different, but in my experience, that's rare that someone would have a memory going back that far. But you know, so first of all, I want to say that there is incredible value in tuning in and going inward into, you know, even having an awareness of the chakras and what their job is and where we hold energy in those areas of the body, and starting to understand, you know, what was my bonding experience with safety and connection, and like, ooh, I just remember I didn't really feel that safe. I don't have a memory, but I have a feeling about that. And so we can literally take some deep breaths and start and allow ourselves to have an awareness of that feeling. And what I do in terms of clearing and energy work is just to visualize our grounding cord, you know, the grounding cord connection to the earth, and just invite my body to breathe into that feeling, allow it to exhale and release down the grounding cord. And whether or not I have evidence of energy releasing or not, I get a sense, a feeling of release in my body. And then what I can do is start to feel into, well, what does safety mean to me right now? And then maybe I conjure up an image, or maybe I have a safe place in my life right now, and or maybe I don't, and I can still conjure up an image. You know, I could imagine being just wrapped in a blanket and just being held here as safe. Conjuring up those images and bringing the felt sense to the cellular body does something. It does rewire. It does start to carve new neural pathways where we've been operating by default on the feeling of unsafety without even realizing it. So as we consciously choose what, you know, what we're thinking, what we're feeling, you know, what we can repattern in our body, we are experiencing shifts.
I love that recommendation, because part of it is also just thinking about, even if you don't remember, but just thinking about how you might have felt or sensed in those early years, and then doing some small steps that can help you feel more safe, help you feel more grounded. And it might not be a paradigm shift immediately, but with each exercise you do, you're making that small micro progress that ultimately will lead to that change. And Wendy, you also talk about the importance of honoring the trauma healing process. So talk to us a bit about that.
Yeah. So in energy work, so as an intuitive energy healer, we've been working with trauma as healers for a long, long time. It's just we've never called it trauma. We've called it karmic energy. We've called it past life. We've called it, you know, imprints. We've had other words in the, you know, sort of in the energy spiritual repertoire, but ultimately it's trauma. I mean, trauma is an experience that happened that we didn't have the capacity, or even the brain development to be able to process what was happening, and or, you know, influence, impact on us on a body, mind, soul level. And later in life, when it's safe, we can process that trauma, when our body finally says, okay, it's safe now to work with this, to process this. You know, trauma is significant in the field right now. I think we all lived through the same 2020 year where, I mean, it was one thing after another, and we could probably pick many years that we've experienced this. I certainly have felt like, wow, I just took a deep breath after processing that, and I turn a corner and this next thing is happening. And the level of non-repair, or the level, like the ability that we haven't been able to come down in our nervous system to repair or recover from the previous trauma, we stay in a fight or flight mode. And so this is very much the temperature of what's kind of occurring in the field right now, is that, you know, where we've got adrenaline, we've got fight, flight, or freeze. There's a lot of trauma responses that are happening to our sensitive bodies. And so it's our, I believe, you know, so much of our evolution and growth is coming from being able to look at our personal traumas that are upheaving, and and really making a concerted effort to do the healing work and process these traumas, because it's important that we find our deeper self. And when we do that, we find our deeper self, we have a different relationship to our nervous system. So to be clear, our soul, our spiritual anatomy, and our soul underlies the nervous system. If underneath my nervous system, I'm living with some past life karma around whatever it might be. I mean, you know, feminine suppression or anything. And I'm not processing that those wounds in my spiritual anatomy, it's going to send signals to my nervous system to stay in hypervigilance or alert on some level, say, and some reactivity. But if I start to heal on that, nervous system has to come in, you know, into some level of regulation from being dysregulated. It's one of the important reasons I feel that we need to be, you know, really, really working on our traumas.
Action Tribe, before we proceed, I wanted to remind all of you that I'm hosting a live breathwork journey to send healing for my mom's recovery from COVID. As of recording this message, she is still on the ventilator and her lungs are really weak, although she's showing small signs of recovery. My intuition led me to organizing this Zoom event because I believe in the power of meditating together. This event is completely donation-based, and the funds collected will be used towards her hospitalization expenses and rehab costs once she's back home. To read more and save your spot, visit my7chakras.com/bringmomhome. That's my7chakras.com/bringmomhome. I really look forward to your support, because together we can help my mom heal her lungs and come back home. Thank you so much for your love. Yeah, absolutely. Just like you pointed out, sometimes, especially because of what we're going through right now, it might feel like as soon as you solve one problem, the other thing comes about. And as soon as you complete that, something else is there, right? And it feels like a battle of, you know, stage one, stage two, stage three, and then boss level, just like the, you know, games that we used to play back in childhood. But I love that you mentioned that our spiritual journey is often intricately tied with our physical journey, and our physical journey is our nervous system. And so if you're able to, after stage one, know how to maybe in a way heal ourselves or ground ourselves or go back into our root, then it's not like we are disowning our challenges, but at least we are showing up in a way that is supporting us and nurturing us and allowing us to show up in life, no matter what challenges we go through. You know, we are, from a physical standpoint, you know, better able to cope with these difficulties. You talk about different types of trauma. You talk about, you know, ancestral trauma or maybe trauma from a previous lifetime. My question to you is, how do you know if the blocks is actually an ancestral trauma versus something else that might be holding us back, and whether we actually need to know that?
Yeah, it's a great question. Do you need to know? Not always. So ancestral trauma, and sometimes it's also referred to as intergenerational trauma, which ultimately is, if the ways you can identify it is, if, for example, I'll make something up. The women in my family never stepped into their power. Now, that's not actually entirely true in my family, but let's just say this. I was raised in a family lineage where the women had to give up their power to the whoever. And I knew, and I identified inside myself that there's a feminine wound in my body, and I give my power away. I over caretake. I'm the peacekeeper. There's a whole bunch of symptoms. I'm a perfectionist. I need all these different things, let's say. And then I think back, well, my mom was like that. And I actually remember her telling me stories of how her mom, you know, was that way. Sometimes we have stories that we hear that get passed on, that we have some awareness of, maybe it's mother, maybe it's grandmother, maybe that's as far as it goes. And it's so sometimes those stories can tell us if something was just sort of passed on through the lineage. And sometimes we don't know if it was passed on through the lineage. We don't cognitively know. But sometimes intuitively we have a sense. And how do we do that? We close our eyes, we tune in, we feel into our body, we feel into the issue or the symptom, we'll say, of whatever's stirring. And we can ask our soul, you know, how far back does this go? How far back is it that I gave my power up? And then we sit and we wait as long as it takes, because sometimes it's not quick and we need to give it the time. And that time, maybe we sit for 5-10 minutes and we wait for information. Maybe it's a picture. Well, I'm seeing an image of, maybe it's my great-great-grandmother, and I don't have any evidence of this, but I have an intuitive sense of it. And maybe I'm starting to see back in these times where, you know, she's like, you know, scrubbing the laundry over the wash bin, and, you know, there's a war that's going on. You know, we start to let the picture emerge and open up. And what's important, without, and again, we don't have to go into like past life regression here or anything, but what's important to access is when we start to look at these ancestral lines and lineages inside ourselves, is that we're accessing the imprint of the emotion. We're accessing the depth of the powerlessness. I need to feel how hard, how scary, how difficult line in my family line to have their rights, to have their existence. And I need to feel that and process that and breathe into that. And then I also, for their sake and mine, need to say, I'm not doing that. I need to let this go. I need to breathe into it and acknowledge that I'm not going to carry this anymore for the lineage, for the women in the family. It stops with me, stops here. And I'm going to take some deep breaths and into it. I'm going to, you know, clearing is a whole other subject here, but I'm going to let it go down my grounding cord, or I'm going to cut the cord, or I'm going to send the energy in a bubble. I mean, there's all different types of ways we can release it. And sometimes our own intuition will tell us, how do you want to release this? No, the source, not always. But if we get to the depth of the feeling, sometimes it's just a matter of making space for that emotion and then deciding and choosing that this is what I want to step into now. This is how I want to live in my body.
Yeah, I think that's very, very useful. Just sit down in silence and think back to the previous generation, the one before that, and notice some trends maybe, or maybe get that deep down knowing. And if it speaks to you, say that this is not going to continue beyond me, and then, you know, do the clearing, which I absolutely love. And if somebody is watching the live stream right now, if you can take a moment to share this, because in doing so, you're going to allow more people to come across this very useful, very practical information that Wendy is sharing right now. So make sure you share this post on YouTube. Wendy, my question now is about soul contracts. Sometimes prior to our present life, we might have certain soul contracts with that one person or two individuals because of some soul level learning that we crave. And that soul level learning sometimes manifests as illness. Sometimes it might manifest as financial difficulty, mainly because we have to go through that bump and then learn something. So any advice about noticing or knowing if it's a soul contract?
Yeah, I mean, in many ways, I think soul contracts are prevalent. I mean, I think there's a lot of things that could be soul contracts from the people we are in partnership with, and we have, you know, our nuclear families with, to people that trigger us incredibly that are, you know, our best teachers in the moment. They were contracted to, you know, for us to get triggered, to life experiences, like you said, illness, or you know, different experiences that we might have. And sometimes, you know, what's interesting, and this is such a great like bridge between trauma and soul contracts, in that, you know, sometimes the spiritual, like, it can be very helpful to acknowledge and know the spiritual contract. Again, sometimes the only way we access that is if we can tune in for ourselves, or maybe work with an intuitive or a healer, someone who can identify maybe there's a contract. And sometimes, so contracts can be very beneficial to know, like, wow, I actually participated in this dynamic of which I have felt victimized. Like, I'm not a victim here. I actually played a part in this. I brought it on. And so I'm going to, you know, one of the ways we clear contracts is by taking responsibility for our part and saying, you know, I am taking back my energy for all the times in my life and in this situation where I gave you the impression that, you know, that I could take care of your energy. I'm so sorry I gave you that impression. That was not what I can do. I'm taking my energy back now, and I'm giving your energy back to you. And, you know, I'm identifying what our agreement must have been on a soul level, and we're clearing the contract. The part where contracts can be very difficult is that we do need to be able to be in objectivity to identify and look at contracts. If we're really stuck in a human trauma and experience, contracts are not helpful, especially when it comes to loss. Like, if somebody loses a loved one and they're grieving, coming in at the spiritual lens and saying, well, that was their contract, might actually trigger and hurt and you know, traumatize, you know, someone even more. And so I think there's this like discrepancy in when, you know, when do we want to talk about contracts, and, you know, maybe the loss of whomever, 2, 3 years, 4 years down the line, we can look at the contract if it's beneficial and helpful. But sometimes in those really tender moments when someone is emotionally activated, sometimes the contract work, we might want to say, okay, let's put that aside and just really be here as an empath, and let me hug you and love you and give you, what can I do, offer you, is more beneficial than going into the spiritual in that way. And contracts are prevalent. They are a part of so much. And I don't know that I personally believe that everything is contracted, because I believe in free will. I believe we do choose. We create a lot of our karma along the way too. But we certainly do have karmic connections that we're contracted with to meet in this lifetime, to do some of our most incredible and important work.
Yeah, I think that's some great, useful information and advice about soul contracts, because in acknowledging them, you're also acknowledging the role that you played in that particular interaction or that challenge. And so by taking your power back, that's very empowering, because you now know that you can take actions, you can take steps, you can change your thought patterns or belief systems to move in a different direction. And I completely agree that discussions of these kinds should be very nuanced, and you need to know what to say at what moment. Sometimes it's it's just better to let the person grieve or cry or whatever it's needed for the present moment until they're ready to notice, you know, things from a higher vantage point and to read between the lines of how universe is working, you know, through them for their greatest good. Now that we've spoken about all these important topics, what is your definition of clearing energy? Because that is, you know, you talk a lot about that as well, right?
Yeah, so my definition is the process of through breath and awareness and intention that we are going inward to where an energy block is stored in the body, which sometimes we access through our intuition, seeing, hearing, feeling, knowing, and that we identify where that block is in our system or that energy imprint is in our system. And we, through breath and awareness, we start to bring attention and breath into that wound or whatever it might be, and we start the process of clearing the consciousness of that wound and through the exhale pattern in the body that we're letting the energy release and exit from our energy bodies.
Mm-hmm. And what role does processes like smudging play in all of this? Mm-hmm.
Yes, also great. That's also energy clearing. So it's a tool. So I just want to be clear that, you know, smudging comes from indigenous cultures. And so it's prevalent in spiritual practices that we use it as a clarifying, you know, quality to it. So do other ones like Palo Santo, and there's sweet grass and other different herbs that you can burn to cleanse the space that have been used in ceremony to purify, to clear negative energy from the field and from our air, from the air around us. So I guess the definition I gave was specific to inside the body, but we can, you know, we can certainly experience energy clearing through, like you said, saging or smudging. We can also through essential oils, people experience clearing through certain types of, supplements. People can go through transformation in the body and clear out old energy from their cells. And there's all different types of tools to access that transformation. And we can clear energy through Reiki and through all, you know, there's lots of different techniques to be doing it in our body and in our space around us.
Yeah, that is very amazing because I've not dabbled too much into smudging. I do use essential oils, which I find really powerful. But like I mentioned, I went for that plant medicine ceremony of mushrooms. And over there, they did a lot of smudging. And I could feel, you know, just the gunk and the stagnant energy maybe that had collected in my aura, in my energy centers for maybe months or years, just clearing away. It can be a little bit too intense initially, but then once you get used to it, it's such a purifying experience.
Yeah.
And Wendy, you talk also about using journaling, right, to uncover maybe some subconscious patterns. And I love journaling a lot, but maybe could you talk to us about how journaling can help notice these patterns in our life and explore them?
Yeah, especially if we approach our journaling from that intuitive writing perspective. Sort of another way of saying it is our stream of consciousness or letting the soul write the words down on the page. Another way of accessing that is by being more inquisitive, you know, and you know, letting the soul, you know, ask the questions, you know, what's needed in my life right now, and we start to journal out that information. When we approach journaling from that perspective, it can be very healing. It can be very validating. It can strengthen your intuition, and it can be very cathartic to, you know, to let your soul speak on paper and then come back to that. And maybe I know I'm in this boat oftentimes, I have to like take my own medicine. Like, I've got to practice what I preach now. You know, if I like write it down and I go get a big aha, it's like, I have to listen to that, you know? So journaling can be very cathartic, especially too after healing work or after clearing work. We can go to pen to paper and just start writing whatever comes out. It could be forgiveness. It could be anger. It could be, you know, inspiration. It could be deeper truth that comes out. It's very cathartic to journal.
Yeah, absolutely. At the beginning of this year, I decided deep down that I want to really bring more sacredness into my journaling. So I bought a really good notebook with good quality paper, right? So that thicker variety of paper, and about a fountain pen, not a ballpoint pen, but a nice fountain pen, right? And I just wrote a lot, you know, I just wrote a lot. And also after my ceremony, I just kept writing. This morning itself, during one of the coaching sessions, we were talking about journaling. And my client asked, have you done automatic writing? And it's so remarkable that you speak about it right now, because I do want to get more into that automatic writing way of journaling, because so far I've used a lot of prompts. What do I want more in life right now? If money and time were not an issue, what would I do more of and less of? And what are the challenges in my life? So any other advice in terms of how to really get started with automatic writing and, you know, connecting with your soul?
Yeah, absolutely. I just thought of a practice, which I do talk about in my book, which is that front body, which is how we engage in the world and also is part of our frontal cortex, is so much about our, you know, it's our executive functionings, it's our organization, it's, you know, it's a part of a brain we need that part of us. And the journaling experience is absolutely back body. So what I recommend is that we have through the crown chakra of our body, we have our divine downloads. We receive the shower of grace, and it does flow up through front body and back body, but we, by default, we don't typically emphasize the back body, but that is where we go into introverted nature. So I would actually recommend closing your eyes, leaning back, and allowing the shower of grace into the back body and the back side of your body. And it will touch in on all the back sides of the chakras also. But to just spend a few moments there connecting in that way through the back body. And that engages intuitive listening. It engages maybe pictures and images, which actually aren't frontal lobe. As much as we have the third eye here, a lot of the pictures and images come through the back side of the divine downloads. And so I'm, you know, here I am, I'm about to start my journal practice. I'm just going to allow myself to receive and deeply intuitively listen to my higher self and see what words come through. And sometimes that grace that flows as it comes down, it comes into the heart space, and then it opens up the arms, sort of that bilateral heart meridian that comes down our arms. And then we've got more flow coming through the hands. And so when we come to journaling, we sort of have this more engaged energetically, and we can sort of write more from that stream of consciousness, sort of higher self place.
That is a great, great technique that I'm sure many of our listeners who are listening right now are going to try. And as you said that, you know, what came to my mind was that I need a massage, because a massage tends to be done on the back, right? And like you pointed out, right, it's all connecting the nervous system. In doing so, the person who is working with you is able to massage certain stuck, right, muscles maybe or tendons in your body, and releasing that stuck pattern, which I'm guessing would help you with your journaling. So that's what I'm going to do, is do a massage in waterfront downtown Vancouver and get a coffee and just watch the beautiful Pacific Ocean and the mountains in the background and do some journaling.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply. As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Oh, I love it. I love it. That's so true, though. The back, when you do back massages, back body, it does. It opens up the back body to allow more of that flow. Absolutely. I love that.
Cool, cool. And so coming to the next question, you spoke how important grounding is, because when it comes to an empath, the first three chakras are very important, the root, the sacral, and the solar plexus. So what role does grounding play? And then maybe how can somebody do a little more grounding in their lives to feel more connected, feel more centered?
Yeah, so grounding is the process of being in connection with the earth element energetically. And so on a like very physiological level, that is walking on the earth and being in nature and allowing the natural world, the elements of nature to connect, and for our biorhythms to syncopate with the earth frequency, and that we come down into our body, it quiets our mind, it might make us go to sleep, which is a good thing. And so in a technology, we have a lot less connection to the natural world. You know, we're not farming. I mean, I'm making big generalizations here, so some people might be farming, but you know, not the majority of certainly in the United States might not be having their hands in the soil and growing our own food and, you know, doing things that are very, very grounding. And so what's important for our intuitive system is that we do find moments to ground into our body, because grounding is coming down into our legs and feet, but grounding is also coming in to the central channel of our body. We, by default, move to the periphery of our energy field in our daily life on some level. The going inward, the closing our eyes is grounding, going inward to the central channel, and then allowing our energy to come down into our body is very healing for the heart, for the upper body, for when we're too much in our heads and we need to maybe connect more to the heart or to the belly and bring our awareness deeper into embodiment. So, that's some of the major benefits of grounding.
Of course, yeah. I love that you shared that we as human beings have progressed so much. We've got the best phones, we've got technology that can potentially send us to Mars, and we've got everything that's possible, and yet we don't realize the own human technology that we have in terms of how our body is able to communicate with the earth. and receive that healing and feel more centered. And maybe we don't have the metrics right now to measure that grounding, but we can feel it. We feel so released, so relaxed as soon as we place our bare foot on the ground, on the soil or the sand. In fact, right after this, I'm going to the nearby park to meet a friend for some grounding. And maybe our listeners can take a moment to notice and think about how they can ground right now. Maybe they've forgotten about grounding over the last couple of months because it's been so stressful or anxiety driven. But like you reminded us, it's important for that self-care to ground sometimes. And I wanted to give some love to some of the people that have been commenting over here. You've got Lara Bianco, who's been commenting. Carrie Stillman, she says, wow, that's amazing. I'm going to use that for sure. And Lara says, you're great, Wendy. I can really hear you. And these amazing comments. So if you have any questions, please add a comment below. I know a lot of you are watching us live. And Lara also says, we grew up in a very similar environment, except I was the youngest of five, but absorbed everything. Sorry, were you saying something?
Thank you. No, thank you for saying that and sharing it. And I do believe that, even if it wasn't exactly my story in terms of a large family, it's just important that we do recognize that, we as empath sensitive beings, spiritual beings, we're certainly raised. We weren't raised with necessarily it common language to the adults in our life around sensitivity and intuition and, all of these, this is what boundaries look like. Like these things weren't taught to us. We were raised with what was normal at the time. And, we are in a more evolved time. Children now, these days, there's more connection to emotions being taught in parenting books. Those sorts of books didn't exist 40 something years ago, to the degree that they do now. I think it's important that we're making these connections. Mm.
Yeah, parenting can be such a difficult job these days, right? Because you always have somebody new who's coming up and talking or instructing you about a new way of parenting. Sometimes people say the old days were good.
Yes.
Sometimes people say they were not good. The new days are better. Some people say that you need to pay attention to your child's sensitivity. Some people say you're too sensitive. So is there a middle ground, or what are your thoughts on this? How does a parent go about deciding who to follow in terms of, taking care of their children? Because time is precious. Before you know it, they're 7 years and 14 years and 21.
Right. Yes. Exactly. So I'm a parent, and what I'd say is that she's 6 years old. And what I'd say is that whatever your personal struggle is in parenting, when you start to research questions like wanting to get more in, how do I work with this issue? Your child's going to be your best teacher. And so, because they're going to trigger our stuff. And so when we start to say, how do I work with this? My child isn't listening, or there were in power struggles. When we start to research and look at who might be teaching on those particular topics, we can be drawn into the right resources that we might need. I will tell you from an empath parenting, empath perspective, and I certainly want to be clear, is that I'm not, the perspective I'm coming from is not meant to wrong the generations where we were receiving messages about, children are meant to be seen, not heard, and, not validating emotions. That was appropriate for those times. Later in life, and it's through the rise of therapy and personal growth and healing work that we started to realize there's a lot of suppressed emotions that didn't get to be processed way back then because I didn't know it was okay for me to feel my feelings. Instead, I just felt shame. And so as adults, we are processing not just old emotions, but we're processing the shame of having them. And so it's sort of multi-layered. The other part to say this about children from an empath perspective, if you do have a very sensitive child like I do, being able to name the emotions and validate emotions is incredibly healing for a child. It's very important for their development as a child, but certainly as a sensitive child, because empaths have learned young how to navigate the unspoken. Things were not clarified for many adults who adult empaths who were children. The experiences happened and they had to kind of navigate the messy, but there wasn't someone saying, honey, that's my energy. That's mommy's feelings. That's not yours. That wasn't typical back then. And so, and I'm making big generalizations, and there may be some exceptions to some how some people were raised, but it's important for the children now that we're able to say, you know, this is anger. You're experiencing anger, and I know that mommy said something that you don't like, and I'm sorry that upset you, and I'm going to let you have your emotion. Or, you know, again, I'm generalizing here, but when we start to give the child the permission and just sometimes the language around the feelings that they're having, they're starting to develop emotional capacity. And that is important for empaths, again, who have learned how to just keep the peace and not have a feeling about anything, and therefore get very overwhelmed in adult life when emotions are happening around them. Just the young consciousness in the body doesn't have the skill around it. Not as like a wronging, but that just didn't develop because there wasn't that parent saying that. And so, yes, so being able to say, this is this feeling, you know, and naming emotions can be very important for children. That's kind of the beginning too. There's more to say about the whole parenting book too.
Well, thanks a lot for sharing that advice. I'm sure many parents who are listening right now are able to use it and maybe try it in their households with their children. And Action Tribe, I hope you enjoyed today's episode so far. And now you know a few more things about navigating the world as an empath and someone who is on the journey of accessing and strengthening their intuitive gifts. Know that it's never too late to realize that this is your path, whether you're 25, 35, 45, 55, or even 65. If you're listening to this podcast, it means that now is the best time to start or continue your journey of trusting your inner voice. Because consciousness is the only reality, and it is to there that we must go to germinate a brand new expression of yourself. Your current reality is the result of months or even years of belief systems or recurring thought patterns or emotions that have led you to where you are. So in order to change it, you need to go to the source and plant new intentions, trusting that you are exactly where you need to be right now. Because as the award-winning author Paulo Coelho once put, intuition is really a sudden immersion of the soul into the universal current of life, where the histories of all people are connected and we're able to know everything because it's all written there. So think about that moment and realize that it is never too late. So, Wendy, it's now time for the last round for today, the wisdom round. 4 questions, like a rapid fire round, so that our listeners can take note and take action. So what is the best piece of advice that you have received in your life?
Oh boy, the best piece of advice, rest and the rest will come.
Nice. And if you could turn back time and spend 1 hour with someone who is living or maybe not living, who would it be?
It would probably be my dad. Yeah, he passed years ago, but yeah, you're my dad.
And what is it one thing you do in the morning or maybe in the evening before you go to sleep that has improved the quality of your life?
Meditation, for sure. Morning and evening meditation. It's a life changer.
Wonderful. And if somebody wants to get a copy of your book, how should they go about doing it?
You can go to my website. It's wendyderosa.com, and that's where you can find more information about my book. The other place is my school, the School of Intuitive Studies.com. Either of those places.
Wonderful. Sounds good. Action Tribe, I also wanted to mention that as a listener of our podcast, you get access to one credit from audible.com, which, by the way, is one of the largest libraries of audiobooks, so that you don't have to read the book, but you can listen to a book. And just like a podcast, you can have hundreds, thousands of books on your phone and listen to your favorite book. So why not grab a hold of Wendy's book by going to my7chakras.com/free book, my7chakras.com/free book. Just search for Wendy DeRosa and, you know, download her book, and it's free. All right. So, Wendy, thank you so much for joining us on today's show, talking to us about being an empath and sharing all these amazing techniques and stories that is now going to be used by me as well as people who listen to our show. Before you go, tell us one thing that you are grateful for, and how can we? You've already shared your website, so I'm going to put it on our show notes, but you can share it once again.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing I'm grateful for, a lot of things. I think I'm grateful for the opportunity to be able to support and connect with so many people who are stepping into their power and learning and growing and healing. I'm really grateful to be able to and just be part of it. I feel like it is it's symbiotic. You know, we're all doing it together. I'm grateful we are all doing this together. And my website, again, is wendyderosa.com.
Awesome. So, Action Tribe, if you are on Instagram, and I know that many of you are, make sure that you take a screenshot of this episode and tag both me and Wendy. My handle is @my7chakras. And Wendy, your handle is?
It's wendyderosa.com. Or sorry, it's wendyderosa. Just @ Wendy DeRosa.
So tag both of us so that we can share your story. If you have any questions, comments, observations, make sure you email me. My address is aj@my7chakras.com. That's aj@my7chakras.com. And to check all our amazing episodes from the past, go to our website, my7chakras.com. So Wendy, thank you so much for coming on our show, talking to us about so many amazing topics, especially how to navigate this, you know, global situation as an empath and taking us one step closer to a human revolution.
Thank you so much. It's been an honor to be here. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to My Seven Chakras at my7chakras.com. That is my7chakras.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.